Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about House of X. It's been 2 years and it's still fucking going. Of course, I'm my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
And they're all pod people.
Also with us is Red Ink.
Where the fuck is the story going? Just ended already.
And we are talking about Hickman's House of X storyline. Problem with a storyline like this that has an elevator pitch is that is extremely simple is that if you try to keep it on the elevator pitch, or base premise level as long as possible, it's going to get worse and worse. And it's literally like that thing on The Simpsons of when we're going to get to the fireworks factory, because it's been two fucking years and nothing has happened. The first three books explain everything and everyone is at the exact same place they were the first three books of this fucking thing. Nothing progressed. Nothing changed. It's like fucking Endless Eight, man.
I mean, it's been nothing but world building, and I mean, as a big fan of world building, I'm kind of all for that, but like Ben says, like, literally, they're at this one level, and they keep adding to that, and I mean, there's only so much shit you can put in a sandwich before it all starts falling out the sides. I mean, okay, the mutants have a homeland in the island of Krakoa, the island that lives like a man. Fine, cool. You got every mutant in the known Marvel universe from Earth is on this island, and they're all partying it up and making mutant babies, none of which have actually shown up yet. Sure, why not? And you've got this weird cult-like mentality where, you know, how all these disparate ideologies and people who hate each other on site wake up every day and choose violence kind of people are just not constantly trying to kill everybody. I mean, it makes no sense. I mean, you have like the Mutant Liberation Front, like Strife's version of Magneto's acolytes. They're all living in, you know, the middle of bumblefuck nowhere on the island, and they just like say fuck you Wolverine now and again. That's it. Like, why are they working together so well? Like, Wolverine hasn't thrown a punch at Cyclops in over 5 years. What the fuck?
See, this is another thing that makes me...
Also, Cyclops was a crazy fucking killer, like, yes. Yes. 2 years ago?
Magneto-esque?
Yes. Well, that's the other thing is they actually had this really interesting idea with the X-Men after the whole Jesus... Nate Gray thing. And where all the mutants or all the X-Men left is basically Cyclops, Wolverine, and Wolfsbane and like three other guys, and they're like, and Cyclops has like a list, and it's basically a suicide / revenge list of, you know what, there's no X-Men left except for us. Our days are numbered, so we're going to at least kill these fuckers and make the world better for the next mutants that come after us. And not a great idea, but it was an okay idea.
I can already see the idea of what's going on in here, and I don't know if I'm going to be proven right, because who the fuck knows, because of Hickman. But it all has to do with cause and effect. Like, if you read the other, well, if you read the first fucking comics, because the first comic lays it all down, there's multiple timelines where Moira MacTaggert has been reborn and shit like that. She's secretly a mutant, her mutant power actually hides that she's a mutant. It's stupid. Anyways, she's reborn, been reborn, I think, nine times, and there's one last.
It's like the Roman numeral for 10. X, oh my God.
Anyways, she has one more life she hasn't lived. She has one secret life that nobody knows about. Not even, well, it's never been revealed what happened in that life. Anyways, it's probably important. But the cause and effect is mutants make their own thing. They say they're the next to humanity, and that humanity uses outside forces to turn everybody into Captain America. And they evolve in a different strain, and they end up winning the war. Cause and effect.
Yes.
like, it's all really interesting stuff you can do with the X-Men. Like, I'm not against what Hickman's trying to do here, but the story, like I said, it's too much world building. Like, sure, you want to build all this stuff up. You have, like, one of my favorite X-Tales right now is Marauders, which is, it's not Kitty Pryde anymore. It's Kate Pryde. And she's basically a pirate captain sailing on this high-tech ship, going from port to port, rescuing mutants who are want to leave, you know, Vietnam or Japan or America and go to live with their mutant brethren on the island of Krakoa. And there's been stuff mixed in there with, like, Sebastian Shaw, who's still trying, acting like he's king shit of the universe of the Hellfire Club, and it's not working out well for him. You know, you have interesting, it's interesting ideas, but there's no through line. I mean, the most steady through line they've had in recent weeks is this whole Hellfire Gala thing where Emma Frost has set this up, and it's kind of like what they do with the Met Gala in New York, where it's this huge statement, you know, putting things on the map, trying to engender, you know, deals with other nations of the world and get recognition for the nation of Krakoa. But it just goes back to, what is the end goal? Like, we have barely any idea other than the fact that Xavier is working towards something. Magneto's in lockstep with him, and they're possibly the only ones that aren't POB people.
Well, Magneto looks like he's going to betray the X-Men because he's
like
embracing Wanda, and like, you're always going to be my daughter.
Yeah. I mean, there's still, I'm surprised they haven't just made her and Pietro mutants again and get rid of that, you know, revelation. They're not mutants, but they're not even mutates because of the high evolutionary. I mean, it's that and the mystery of what Moira is ultimately trying to accomplish. And it just seems like they're trying to rehash the greatest hits of, like, the 90s X-Men. I mean, the whole idea with Mystique wanting Destiny be reborn, and Moira's like, no precognitive, so we can't have that. So she was basically set up to fail in stopping Nimrod, the ultimate sentinel, from being born. And Xavier and Magneto are like, sorry, sucks to be you. So now we got an upcoming storyline called Inferno, where she's going to bring the whole House of Cards falling down on him. And they rebuilt the Friends of Humanity into this, like, Cobra-esque conspiracy network amongst, like, five different groups of, you know, we got to kill the mutants before they replace us, yada, yada. One of those is Gamma Flight, which is this organization that's supposed to be taking out the Hulk, but now it's directed by Henry Peter Gyrick, and he's using those resources to facilitate this agenda.
I thought Alpha Flight was part of that. I'm like,
well, it was Alpha Flight, and then they renamed it to Gamma Flight. And
Canada involved in this?
Well, no, Alpha Flight became everyone's favorite Avenger, Captain Marvel's little space agency project.
Why is a U.S. Air Force officer leading a Canadian?
It's not a Canadian group anymore. They just took the name. That's literally all they did. They called it Alpha Flight. They've got their own space station.
Huck's on the team.
Yeah. But it's like an internet. At some point, they called it an international thing. And
they're like the G.I. Joe. They're an international attack force.
Yeah, that was only in the Deke series, and we don't talk about that show. And recently in, I think it's the Sword title, which is, you know, the X-Men in outer space, they've terraformed Mars and created their own metal, which is...
No, the Sword title is retarded.
Excalibur title is worse.
I ignore the Excalibur title.
What you're talking about is the new X-Men title, TT.
Yeah.
Like, the Sword title, oh my god, it's so stupid. When I get to that, I'll explain to you how fucking retarded that was.
But... The point remains is, and this is going to come up a lot, and we're not going to stop saying it, yes, they are all pod people. And the other big problem with this is, you know, they set up Moira real big, real early on. They dedicate a whole book saying she's the one behind the curtain. And then she just went up into a fucking tower, and no one fucking sees her except for, like, her showing up once to say, no precogs. And then she goes back up into her tower.
Is she in a tower? I thought that pod of hers is, like, buried underneath Krakoa.
It's a figure of speech.
Okay.
There's a little, like, there's a part of Krakoa called the Unknown, I can't remember what the it's actually region. Called, but it's like the Unknown Region, and that's where Moira and a couple other mutants are all hanging out. And
yeah, and basically, it's, if you read the first three issues, by the way, they just stuff them with exposition dumps, stuff them with extra information. There's extra literal pages of just text. Just fucking text. Not even wall text. Just like you're reading a manual for setting up, for repairing your carburetor, text with diagrams and symbols and like, and there's an alphabet there. It's like here's all this extra information. It's like,
yeah, here, we'll just download this into your prefrontal cortex, and you'll be able to talk and think in Krakoan. It's like, gee, that's not indoctrination at all. And, I mean, did they do that to Franklin Lichens?
The only one who can talk to fucking Krakoa is Doug Ramsey.
And maybe Black Tom.
But
Black Tom can, but it's...
They don't get along.
Garbled speech. He doesn't really completely understand Krakoa, but he can get... It's like if you know a bit of a language, and you just get little bits and pieces from it when somebody's talking to you.
At best, you can order right off the menu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's more like you have a pet dog, and you can kind of understand what your dog wants. Oh, he wants that bowl, not that bowl. But what's his name? Cypher is the only one who could really talk to Krakoa. And like I said, the amount of extra expositions, like the diagrams, like this is what the Summer's house looks like. This is what his house on the moon looks like. This is how the gates work. Here are the flowers they're selling to the world. This is the new economy. This is the rule. These are the laws of the Quiet Council.
The X-Men are drug dealers now? Nobody has a problem with that?
Like, oh, I have a huge fucking problem with that. And the other part of that that just fucking shocks me, that no one wants to fucking call him out on, is that really weird feeling where people look at it and like, yeah, the X-Men, now they're like, they have this thing that cures fucking cancer and makes us live longer, but they won't give it to us unless we pay up the ass, even though they said they don't need money.
It's not even paid. Like, the way you pay for it is countries around the world have to recognize Krakoa as a sovereign nation. And unless you want the anti-cancer medicine, you know, or if you don't want it, then, you know, whatever. But you won't get this shit, even through, like, that. You can't say the UK was once partners with Krakoa, and then recently a Clan Akaba, which is like this cult-like offshoot of Apocalypse and his bloodline, like, they took over and they're all magic users, and they don't call mutants, they're all witch breed, and they're huge fucking racists, which may or may not be played off of some of the worst elements of what I've read about British culture. They said, no, we don't want you anymore, we don't recognize you, y'all can burn. And that's the other thing with the mutants, like, they have become, in like, even before, whether it was, you know, good versus evil, X-Men versus the Brotherhood sort of mutants, they were at least accepting of other people. But now the X-Men, and use that title to talk about everyone in Krakoa, they're all incredibly racist. Like, they won't, Havoc wants to, you know, have a pod person of Madeline Pryor made, but, well, she was at best a mutate, and they're not going to do that. And the instant that Franklin Richards lost access to his powers, they're all like, well, fuck, nuts to you, and just locked him out.
Well, that's kind of Dan Slott's fault. It's like, Dan Slott was like, oh, we got Franklin Richards and the X-Men want him. I'm going to make it so he's actually not a mutant this whole time. He's been pretending. Because if the Fantastic Four get involved, they're going to fucking kick the X-Men's ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but what I'm getting at is,
the, like I said, the only part of this whole 2-year debacle that I find remotely enjoyable are times when people who are actually, like, superior to the X-Men and Xavier in this position, and I mean superior not just in powers or stuff like that, but I mean, like, intellectually superior, morally superior, give them verbal smackdowns. Like, fucking Reed Richards gave Xavier a good verbal smackdown. Fucking Dr. Doom said to Xavier once, you're special? I built this. You were just born.
Yeah.
Namor gave
him. Yeah, Namor fucking basically. Namor's like,
do I want to live on a tiny island? I rule all of the fucking ocean. Go fuck yourselves.
Yeah.
Like, I'd have to go back and read Excalibur, but, I mean, they've had the British mutant special agent Pete Wisdom repeatedly say, like, he has no interest. Like, everyone's like, you should come to Krakoa. Come party on Krakoa. And he's like, no. I don't trust you. I don't want to become a pod person. I think he actually said pod person. And that was the thing. But then recently in Excalibur, he was killed by the aforementioned Clan Akaba. So, like, is he going to come out and still be the same? Or is he going to get, like,
indoctrinated? I love pod people.
Why didn't I come here before? This is the best Mai Tai I've ever had.
Yeah.
You know, you got stuff like that. And I think it's in working loosely in concert with Hickman and his vision for what he's doing with the X-Men, how the X-Men have been used in some of the crossover events. Like the Venom-centric King in Black wasn't the greatest thing with this whole, you know, Null, the god of the symbiotes and all that. But even when the X-Men showed up in there, it was just, we got to protect mutants. Like, they added, the X-Men offshoots added absolutely nothing to the story because they're all written as, you know, they don't care about anybody else. Like, what is the point? Like, you go back to that, the previous Uncanny X-Men run just prior to House of X, where, you know, Wolverine and Cyclops have this kill list.
Yeah.
That was interesting. And they ended it in a really interesting way in this last issue. You have this America, I forget what the name is, this army general, who, not Thunderbolt Ross, kidnapped Emma Frost and was using her. He had, like, this, his own army-built version of Cerebro to block her out. And she had, there was some enhancements done to her that gave her, like, supremely advanced telepathic abilities, and she used it to wipe the knowledge of mutants from everybody in the world. And this, because comics somehow also affected, you know, like, government records or something like that. And then literally they're out in public and people are looking right at Wolverine with his, you know, claws out, or Cyclops with his eyes glowing red, and everyone's like, oh, hey Scott, how's it going? And then they, you could have put the mutants, kind of put the genie back in a bottle, and then going forward, have them dealing with people rediscovering mutants and such like that. And then Cyclops, you know, nuts that, has Emma use her powers one more time, and like, oh yeah, mutants exist, and go from there. But the next thing we know,
pod people.
Yeah, Moira comes back this ninth time and sets up House of X again.
See, I didn't like the whole ending with Emma. I liked the earlier stuff where you had, like I said, the kill list. You had Scott and Wolverine together, because there's this great scene at the beginning of this arc where Scott basically goes on live TV. He confronts Captain America and says, were you for the mutants and all this shit? And he basically, because the X-Men are gone, just fucking gone. And then Scott, like, puts a public challenge on TV, says, all right, you guys want to end it? Okay, I'm going to be in this forest at this time. Shows up, and, like, everyone fucking shows up. Like, the fucking evil priests, the fucking Ravagers.
Purifiers.
Yeah. And they're all there to take a piece out of Scott. And then all of a sudden, Wolverine shows up, helps Scott. They fight them back. And it's one of the best moments between Scott and Wolverine where they just look.
I killed the Ravagers.
No, they just look at each other. And Wolverine says, good talk. And then they walk off. And then Wolverine is, like, stitching up Scott's back because he got hit in the back, and Scott's basically being hard on himself, the whole leader thing he does, like, oh, I should have seen this coming, how could I be so stupid, how could I be so drunk with power to allow this to happen? And then Wolverine actually says, look, I've been through this whole thing, and you didn't do that badly. And this is the Wolverine that usually would just get out of his way to admonish Scott's leadership, admonish Scott's ability to handle situations. But here he's like, no, don't be too hard on yourself. This was so big, it wasn't your fuck up. It was just the odds were stacked against you. And Wolverine also said, look, an X-Men needed help, so I helped. So, and there were some genuine good moments between those two of not this long-seated animosity being healed, but at least acknowledged and treated as, okay, things are so big now, we can't have a dick-swinging contest. We have to be X-Men. And they like that
came
shit.
To a truce.
And I like that sorts. Shit. And immediately, as soon as the pod people show up, oh, now they're in a menage a trois. Menage a trois.
I didn't know you could use your claws like that, Logan. Yeah. No, and that, like I said, that previous volume of Uncanny, like, their headquarters, they're basically hiding out in the bottom of Harry's Hideaway, that bar that was just down the road from the Xavier Mansion. And they did, even before Scott called out Cap on TV, like, where were you? Like, he lists, like, talks about the Inferno event, you know, Operation Wide Awake, all these things. Like, where were you guys then? Like, that bullshit. Like, Cap comes to him, and Scott, in a private conversation, basically tells Steve Rogers to go fuck himself. And just reiterates that, where were you for the mutants, like, in all these times? Now, they're obviously building towards, like I said, Mystique going on the warpath to get Destiny back. Potentially, we're going to have, like, a mutant civil war on Krakoa, because there have been other things building in the periphery, like in, was it Way of X, which is the Nightcrawler title. He's basically teamed up with Legion, who has recently been reborn, so he hasn't quite gone nuts again yet. And they're working to prevent Onslaught, who is just a purely psychic entity at this point. He's making a comeback. You have, you know, the remnants of Araco, which was this mutant nation.
Whoever's making Onslaught back come back, somebody in the writer room has to slap their hands and go, no, stop, go. Leave that back in the 90s.
Yeah. But, you had Sword of X or Ten of Swords or whatever, that they had this weird crossover where a bunch of mutants got swords and had to go to the other world, which is part of the multiverse that's inherent to the original Excalibur title and Captain Britain. I haven't read a lot of that. They fought these mutants that were apparently from this island that was part of
Krakoa?
Thank you. I almost forgot how to say it. Called Araco. And then they come back, and Apocalypse, who was part of Krakoa, decides to go off and live in exile with his wife and his original children, who were the original Four Horsemen. And that somehow, it's that weird, you know, it's like arranged marriages kind of political intrigue stuff.
Okay, so here's
the Excess Swords is so fucking dumb. Like,
yeah.
They're like, oh, we're going to gather all these super ancient swords. Every sword, magic sword that's ever showed up in X-Men continuity, we got to gather them all.
Why?
And then they're like, oh, we're going to have this big battle, the Witchbreed versus the mutants kind of fucking thing. And instead of fucking sword fighting or having a fight, they all do the dumb fucking Grim Reaper games out of Bill and Ted.
I think there you was like sunk two by sword battle fights. Sheep. Yeah,
but
best out of seven. Damn right.
Now the worst part about, well, let's talk about what they do about the X-Men that or not the X-Men, but the mutants that suffered from the Wanda No More Mutants situation.
Crucible.
Yeah. They get a chance to be reborn as a mutant, but they don't just get to be reborn as a mutant. They have to go up and fight Apocalypse in a sword fight and be horribly, horribly maimed and mutilated and that die. But when they die, they're going to come back as a pod person. And, oh, you're a mutant now. Yay.
Wait, and the way that, in case you weren't aware, folks, the way that works is because of this multiple lives, reincarnation, BS mutant power that Moira has. They've worked in concert with Mr. Sinister, who Magneto and Xavier put this idea in his head, to make a database of every mutant's DNA in the world, and then worked with Forge to have like multiple server farms around the Earth that somehow psychically back up a mutant's brain every 24 hours. So that's why when they die, and I love that first fight with Apocalypse where he basically has Cloud Strife's sword, like this big slab of metal on a stick, and just whomps this one mutant, and you know, it proves they deserve to be reborn or some BS.
Yeah, it's really fucking awful.
I think I just broke my brain.
It's really fucking awful, and it's really it's just maddeningly they're turning the X-Men into like these really weird ritual people that do weird rituals for the sake of it. Like all of a sudden.
I want somebody to go, hey Chuck, you remember when you just dreamed to help out humanity and prove that we're all fucking human?
Yeah.
And not human as in DNA, human as in just be good people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they lost the fucking plot. And the worst part of it is, I personally think it's telegraphed. Like they gave away everything. It's my personal opinion. And it's the classic tale of an empire built on a house of cards will collapse. And we've seen it everywhere. It's a popular type of story. It's, you know, everyone loves fucking Game of Thrones. Everyone fucking loves House of Cards. Everyone loves like these stories of empires that collapse. And the problem is the empire was built overnight, and the shaky foundation is obvious miles away. The whole point of everyone's all of a sudden acting slightly different. Everyone's all gung-ho and everyone, we are the world bullshit instantly with no fight, no muss, no fuss. And it's like, it's obvious that one of the hints of this is certain mutants, certain X-Men, certain popular X-Men that everyone loves, that everyone likes to read books about, everyone that are bestsellers, are gonna like get a little jarred and be like, oh, wait a minute. Why am I agreeing with this? Like, maybe like a little blonde girl is going to be like, hey, I'm going to zap your head a little bit. And all of a sudden you're going to like start questioning things.
A young Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, I like I said, like with this.
It's obvious. It's obvious. It's telegraphed. Like the first three issues is telegraphed. And the worst part about it is, for all the world building and intricate detail and the diagrams of the houses and all this shit, I just remember back to one of the most important X-Men storylines of all time, that even like the most plebeian newbie comic readers have heard of, that everyone will agree has influenced the X-Men and the characters for decades to come. Is Days of Future Past, and that fucker was two issues long.
Yeah, and it is, again, one of the all-time great story. I'm not seeing that. It's sadly a part of the business nowadays. Like, you can't do, you know, a reboot like this without marketing having way more sway than they really should. In this sort of thing, that's why you get, like I said before, with the King of Black storyline, you had a core miniseries, you should have had like two tie-in miniseries to cover the story, but no, you have to have a dedicated Miles Morales tie-in mini, because Miles Morales is hot stuff right now. You have the Avengers in there, because, well, of course, you had tie-in issues from the Fantastic Four, which came out after the conclusion of the event. It's just too much.
I wouldn't say Miles Morales is hot stuff. I think Miles Morales is more like 2018 Roman Reigns, like WWE or Marvel is trying to push him so fucking hard, but the audience is like, no, get him away. We don't like him.
Well, fan of Roman Reigns, I don't think he is It's the best thing since sliced bread.
It's like this. Like, Into the Spider-Verse did fucking great. Lots of people were like, I like this kid now. And then they read the books like, oh, he's still an insufferable prick in the book. Okay, never mind. Put he's this just away.
Peter Parker with blackface and...
With more melanin? He's more compassionate?
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, point remains is Into the Spider-Verse did bring a lot of goodwill to the character that has been squandered and pissed away in the last couple of years, so that's gone. And the other problem is the mutants are trying to talk about culture. Like, oh, we have mutant culture, we have mutant language, we have mutant music, and it's all shit that was invented in an afternoon. And it's like they try to talk like you have an issue of fucking Fantastic Four where you have
Franklin Richards
listening to mute music and he's like, oh, it's mute music, you wouldn't understand. It's like
well, it's called being a kid. Like
I call it being a prick.
I remember being a kid and fucking like. My parents not run, like I used to be into hip hop. My parents didn't understand it, like into country and shit. So,
yeah.
But to me, it's like them acting like, oh, we have this culture now, this amazing, wonderful culture, and it's like your culture. I have socks older than your culture.
Yeah, because I mean, before this, who were the only mutant? What was the only mutant music they had in Marvel? It was.
Dazzler
and Lila Cheney, you know,
and
who I think was kind of created on the whole idea that she's like the mutant Pat Benatar. You have stuff like that, but see, I think I do believe this to be true. My theory is that Hickman, as brilliant a writer as he is, and he's come up with some really good stuff, and there's a lot of stuff in this X-Men thing that I have enjoyed. It's just I am supremely annoyed by it. You haven't answered any questions yet. This isn't Lost. You're not J.J. Abrams. Is, again, to go to the business side, is Marvel has no multimedia plans with the X-Men right now. Like, the whole idea of them getting anything done right now is predicated on where they are in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's where all the focus is on Marvel. So they're letting Hickman do whatever the hell he wants with the X-Men, because I guarantee you, as soon as they get close to production start, they're going to end this thing. They're going to pull the rug out. They're going to hit the reset switch, and they're going to have a new writer come on who's going to make the X-Men world be more like what they want to do in the movies. You see it right now at DC Comics, because you got James Gunn's The Suicide Squad coming out pretty soon. And in the comics, they've already building the team that we're going to see in the movies. Like, you've got Peacemaker, Bloodsport's coming on. You know, they're bringing back Captain Boomerang, King Shark's. Like, it's sadly...
Superboy's on the team for some reason.
But they're going to get rid of Connell Connor, because it's Connor Superboy. Unless it turns out to be Match for whatever reason. It's just, that's what they're doing with the X-Men. There's no media, there's no movie TV thing going on. So that's why... it's running all over the map like this, because no one at Marvel, and it's not to, you look at how a few years ago they were trying to make Inhumans a thing, and they never made Inhumans a thing, but that was because Ike Perlmutter is a salty little bitch, and he didn't want to give any free advertising to 20th Century Fox before Disney bought them. That's another huge thing that I don't think a lot of people consider. I mean, I'd love to see a new X-Men cartoon on TVs, but until then, I've got my DVDs of the 90s show in Evolution.
Yeah, like, I see your point. Like, Moya's tense life is going to be the X-Men are reset back to normal.
They can't do that because it's tied into too many of the other books. Because if this...
Time travel, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, true. But... all I'm saying is, if this was a 5-to-8 issue mini that was self-contained and made people think, oh, this actually might be happening, and then they reset the status quo afterwards, they might have had something. It might not be great, but they would have had something. But it's been drawn on so fucking long. And let's talk about fucking Excalibur.
That's how Hickman writes. Like, if you remember the Ultimate Comics where he's setting up the Maker and all that shit, it was almost the same thing. It was like, you have this sandbox, and this kid keeps on bringing out toys to play with. He's not playing with the toys. He's just, oh, I got a new toy. You want to play with this toy? Here's a new toy. Here's another toy. Here's another. We're not going anywhere. We're not playing with the toys. Like, what's fucking going on? Quit showing off your toys already.
Yeah, and let's talk about Excalibur for a minute, because Excalibur, you have Betsy Braddock, now back as a Brit, as the new Captain Britain, and they're having adventures in, like, Avalon and other worlds and shit, and for some reason, fucking Rogue is a member of Excalibur, but she's not British. You have fucking...
Well, they did make it a purely British team, then.
It's... Okay. And then you have this whole thing where they try to explain the whole Psylocke thing again, because you have this issue where Betsy's acting a little nuts. What's going on? Then you have fucking Quanon show up, and she's like, oh, that's not Psylocke. I'm like, okay. What the fuck's going on? And try to explain it in one sentence, because you fuckers, like, going back and forth on this whole Betsy, Quanon, Psylocke thing 4 fucking times in 2 years. Like, they, like, cultural appropriation. Let's make her British again. Oh, but people like the classic Psylocke. How are we going to fix this? It's like, shoot her, get off the fucking can.
Yeah. I mean, I thought I remember in the 90s they had this whole thing where... you know, because what a lot of people know as Psylocke, like Ninja Psylocke, is actually Betsy Braddock's brain in this ninja assassin's body, and that just became the thing. And then eventually that the assassin's mind came back in Betsy's body, and she got the legacy virus, like the mutant AIDS, that was a huge thing in the 90s. And again, go back to Moira, the only human to ever contract the legacy virus. Well, was she really a human then? And I guess they got their own bodies now because of the whole pod person resurrection thing, which...
No, they fixed it before then.
Okay, fine.
And but what happened to Betsy is stupid. I remember it because it happened right before, like, this whole Jesus X-Man thing happened. Betsy, or Psylocke, I should say, got, like, vaporized or something, and then she rebuilt her body molecule by molecule using her psychic powers, which, by the way, pretty sure that's not on her power level, just saying, and rebuilt it as British Betsy. And then, like, in the whole storyline about the Cyclops and Wolverine with the kill list, you had Quanon just show up out of nowhere. He's like, oh, what the fuck? And she's like, I'm not Psylocke, but I'm with you guys, and let's go fucking kill this kill list. And no one explained a damn thing.
No. And, you know, when you look again to the pod people thing, the one good thing that I will give Hickman, and it's a low bar, but I will give this to him, you actually made the mutant character Gold Balls matter. Because in the, like, the point where Wolverine was the headmaster of the Jean Grey Academy for Higher Learning, and Cyclops was all butthurt after, you know, Avengers versus X-Men went off to become Magneto version 2, except he's going to do it better. In the Uncanny X-Men title that Cyclops had, you had this mutant named Gold Balls, who he just had this mutant ability to shoot out these gold spheroids.
Volleyballs. He's shooting volleyballs.
He's shooting volleyballs, and
that's all it was. You brought your wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Exactly. And then when Hickman got a hold of him, he's like, no, we're going to make it so these things, they aren't just balls, they're actually these organic
eggs,
ready-to-order, like, eggs that you can use to make genetic copies of people.
And it's Legion or Proteus that turns them into eggs. Actually,
they're just big, okay. They're just big masses of flesh, big masses of
protoplasm.
Yeah, and then you had Proteus turn them into eggs. You had
plasma.
You had someone inject them with a DNA sample. You had like some reality warper warps reality to, like, give everyone their original equipment, which is why Wolverine has adamantium claws every time he's reborn. And then you have you had like everyone stand in a fucking circle jerk and hold hands and sing Kumbaya, and then Xavier touches them in the head and puts their brain back, slightly altered, of course.
Yeah, and just I think he gets high in his own supply, because every time he's there for like when a bunch of mutants come back, he's like, "To me, my X-Men," and I was like, they always shoot him from the chest up because you know he's rocking like a hard on when that happens, because he just can't get enough of this power that he has. And then the five are treated like nigh unto like Christ walking the earth sort of thing for a lot of the mutants, because, you know, well, it doesn't matter. And I think that's why they're partying all the time and, you know, boning like stone test bunnies, is because they literally have no fear of dying now.
Which is stupid, because, you know, we brought this up in several past podcasts, but you know, the Marvel Universe is one of those universes where they establish there is an afterlife. Half these characters have been there. They remember it. They shook hands with God. And it's not a bad afterlife. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, I'd rather come back as a pod person. Like, I don't know how they're going to, like, have all this all meet. How they're going to justify them as pod people. Are they actually the real people, or are they have souls? Because even as late as the fucking Nick Spencer Spider-Man series, they established souls are things, and people who are cloned can sometimes have their soul come back in their clone body, but not always, because even Doctor Strange fucking said this to the Lizard. He's like, yeah, your son is actually your son. His soul came back into his clone body, but you shouldn't do this because it doesn't happen every time.
Yeah, it's a little too much of a spiritual quagmire for me.
And, like I said, I just find that funny that they actually burned pages of the Spider-Man book for Doctor Strange to give this speech to Kurt Connors about the evils of cloning, because you're not always going to get a soul coming back. You might wind up with, like, yeah, have you ever seen Pet Sematary?
That makes me smile so much, Ben. Thank you for that. Yeah, it's, again, this is, like, when you go to the whole thing with X-Men, like Hickman's X-Men running, I think can be summed up like this, is it's when you go to a new restaurant and you've never had Thai food before, you've never had Indian cuisine before, and everything looks really good and looks really tasty, but are you ready for the ash-shredding aftermath? And I don't think anyone's going to be ready for it, and I don't think anyone's going to particularly enjoy it.
No.
I mean, and as far as X-Men mysteries that have yet to be explained in Hickman's X-Men, I would like to see Hickman explain why when Wolverine was brought back from the dead, yes, it happened, folks, why when he popped his claws, they would come out like red hot.
Oh, that's ignored. People forgot that. That doesn't happen anymore, because the Return of Wolverine mini and the whole thing they built up about how Wolverine has a villain who could be anybody, completely forgotten, because it doesn't fit with Hickman's story.
That's about as good as an explanation as I was going to get.
And Return of Wolverine is not a great comic. It had ideas I loved, though. Like, there were, like, the first three issues had, like, two or three moments, so, like, that's great. That's actually a nice idea, because there's this, like, because it had this whole thing introduced about how Wolverine's brain is a cell block, and all the different aspects of Wolverine are, or memories, are in each cell. And in his brain, this villainess gives him a key, says, here's the key, you let them out if you need to. And I love the first Wolverine lets out is the classic blue and gold costume. He's like, and he opens the door. He's like, hey, I was told I'm a hero. And he's like, hell yeah, we are, bud. And there's that moment. And
he lets out Patch and I know he lets out the Weapon X Wolverine, but not the one that was drawn by Barry Windsor Smith, where he has like 3 feet of hair on either side of his face.
Yeah. And the other one is when he's fighting the X-Men originally and he doesn't have all his memories. The one of the Wolverines, the one in the brown costume, is like, hey, yeah, I know these guys. I can tell you how to beat them. And I thought that was a long characteristic, but then Red pointed out to me, Ben, that's the Wolverine from, what'd you say again?
What?
The Wolverine that gave Logan tips on how to beat the X-Men in that Return of Wolverine mini. The one that wore the brown costume. I thought that was uncharacteristic, but then you pointed out that that's the Wolverine from a specific run, and that made sense.
I can't remember now.
Like, you said it was like, oh, that was his time in Australia or something.
Australia?
That's what you said.
Maybe Savage Land Wolverine? I don't know.
But anyways, the point is Return of Wolverine had some bad ideas, some good ideas. The Burning Claws was a bad idea. But overall, I will have to say that I'm disappointed that all those plot threads that were started in it, boom, gone, poof, forgotten. Because Hickman wanted to do Game of Thrones.
Would you think he could have just done that with the Excalibur title? Because Britain and magic and mysticism. But no, Betsy becomes the new Captain Britain. Sure, why not? Her brother was Captain Britain. I can dig that. But then they turn her into a stained glass window. She gets... which is essentially her soul, it's shattered, and then they spend the better part of the last year and a half trying to bring her back and never quite succeeding until recently. Just in time for the Hellfire Gala. Weird how that happens.
And the Hellfire Gala was, what, six issues spread across six books of basically, oh, look at us, aren't we awesome? We switch costumes every 5 minutes. It's like a fucking Lady Gaga concert here.
I think it was only Emma, though, switching costumes every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I like I said when we talked about that before, I like that one where she's got that weird X headpiece thing, and then the one she wore on where she's basically wearing like this curtain of beads over her bare-ass body, because you know she's not wearing underwear. But then she's walking around in her diamond form, because that's still a thing. But like, yeah. I said before... Sorry, you go, Ben.
I think we've established that the biggest issue with House of X is it's ran far too fucking long, and they stay at the same plot point. And it... If their mission was establish the X-Men as being able to be as prejudiced and as assholery as the people they claim to fight against, mission fucking accomplished, but they fucking accomplished it three issues in, 2 years ago. All this is just fluff. Just get to the point. Like I said at the beginning, fucking Days of Future Past, two issues long. We had more fucking build-up in like a book of an issue of Exiles building up how a world got fucked up, and they were able to unfuck it in less time than this bullshit.
Yeah, it's too many interesting ideas and not enough not exposition, just explanation, you know. Just, and it doesn't have to be a full thing. Like, give us some clues. Let us work it out for ourselves and then pull the rug out of us. No, this is how it really worked. You know, what has worked so well for comic book storytelling over the years. Like, the thing I think at the core of House of X that the biggest problem is Marvel so desperately wants to retcon the X-Men into something that's going to work in the movies that they... don't care what damage is done to the brand in the meantime.
Which is stupid, because the X-Men work in the movies as is.
Yeah. But it would take too many movies and too long to spin the current storyline and make it work for the MCU. So I guarantee you that once they get close to actually making an X-Men MCU movie, they're going to reboot the franchise again, and it's going to look almost one-to-one from what it was in, like, say, the 90s.
It's going to be the 90s lineup, no question. We're going to have fucking Storm. We're going to have Wolverine. We're going to have Cyclops. We're going to have Jean Grey. We're going to have maybe Rogue, depending on what they're going to do. They're going to do the Rogue thing with Captain Marvel. I don't think they want to do the Rogue thing in the movies. I think they're scared to death of doing the Rogue thing.
You're not wrong.
I think they should do the Rogue thing, because the only way you can get any sympathy for the way Brie Larson played the character is fucking, you know, make people empathize with her.
You think it's possible to empathize with Brie Larson, Red?
Not really. They kind of made her unforgivable.
Anyways, maybe we should talk about Carol Danvers in a future episode, because there's a lot to talk about. Jesus Christ, I just was having flashbacks of some of the stories that I remember about her. Like the time she gave birth to her own rapist.
Yeah, we don't need to glorify that story.
Oh, the worst part of it was when she confronted fucking the Avengers for letting her go. You know, Tony Stark's like, but you seem so happy.
Okay, I've never actually read that comic. That actually goddamn happened.
It was the issue where Rogue dragged her dry and threw her off the bridge.
While I've read a lot of comics, Ben, I have not read those comics, so this is a revelation to me.
Okay, I'll find the issue, because, like I said, it's just... Okay, before I end the show, I'm going to give you the rundown of that issue, just so the whole audience hears it, too. So, the issue starts with, you see Spider-Woman floating, sailing through the air, gliding, because she glides, she doesn't fly, and then she sees this unconscious blonde woman thrown off a bridge, so she swoops down and saves her from getting dunked in the ocean, and she takes her to a hospital, and she's catatonic, she doesn't respond to anything, and then fucking Professor Xavier rolls and says, this is Carol Danvers, she's Miss Marvel, and she was attacked by an evil mutant from being controlled by Mystique, and fucking Rogue is wrecking every team. She's wrecking the X-Men. She's wrecking the Avengers. She's wrecking everybody. But the X-Men and the Avengers decide, we gotta team up and we gotta stop Rogue, because Rogue is like fucking everything up with her new power. She's absorbing everyone. She's doing everything. And Spider-Woman is the linchpin in beating her in this comic. You want to know why?
No.
Because she's covered head to toe in her costume.
You can't see my face right now, folks, but I am actually stunned that I never thought of that. Like, mouth open, eyes wide, the hell look on my face.
And why isn't Iron Man a linchpin?
I don't know.
Pheromones. No, wait, that was Spider-Woman, not Rogue. Yeah, okay.
But anyways, they beat Rogue. Rogue retreats with Mystique. And you have this scene where Charles Xavier's like, don't worry, I'll fix Carol Danvers. So he restores her memories. And as we know, this doesn't actually make her back normal. She remembers everything, but she has no emotional attachment to any of her memories. She's just like, yeah, this happened to me. I don't know how I feel about that. And she became like this fucking frigid bitch. Like, Mar-Vell died of fucking cancer. And she's like, oh, people are acting like I should feel sad, but I don't care. But that's a future storyline. The issue ends where everyone's celebrating. They're at the Xavier Mansion, and they're having a fucking pool party with everyone in swimsuits. And, like, everyone's like, it's good to have you back, Carol. It's your powers aren't back yet, but we're sure I'll come back any day now. And then Carol, like, loads off on Tony. He's like, you fuckers! Why do you act like you care about me? You let me go with that fucking rapist that mind controlled me. And then Tony's like, but you seem so happy. And then she's like, fuck the Avengers. I'm going to join the X-Men. And yes, Carol Danvers, with no powers, was a member of the X-Men for a while. And then the binary thing happened.
Where she got experimented on by the Brood and became a living star and was part of the Starjammers for a while.
Yeah, but she was also still a member of the X-Men, even though she was not a mutant. And everyone knows why she left the X-Men, right?
Because Wolverine was crap in the sack?
No. She left the X-Men because all of a sudden she came home after a long day of work, walked in the mansion. Who did she see talking to Xavier?
Rogue.
Yeah. Punched her right to the fucking moon. And then Xavier gives the whole, this is a house of forgiveness. We don't blame everyone for their past crimes and sins. We give everyone a chance for redemption. And then Carol's like, fuck you guys, I'm going to become an Avenger again.
And then she fell into alcoholism and tried to fly to the moon only to pass out halfway there.
Yes. Like, there's a lot wrong with Carol Danvers as a character, but I got to be honest, I give her the slightest bit of a pass about the whole, you know, fuck you guys, you let Rogue on your team, fuck you guys. I give her a pass on that one.
Yeah.
But that's the annotated, abridged version of the Carol Danvers story about the Rogue thing in Beyond. So there you go.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't know about that, JT.
I knew about the whole, like, that issue. Like, I knew vaguely of that issue with, was it the Scarlet Centurion or whatever I think he was called. But I didn't know specifics like that, so.
But anyways.
So, yeah, when House of X comes coming down, like I said, a flaming house of cards, I hope they just go back to the 90s. I will take the dull as dishwater, yellow bandolier strap across his chest Cyclops again than what we have right now.
All right.
Gladly.
Fair enough.
How about you, Red?
I hope they do something new.
Yeah.
That would also be welcome.
All right.
Hey, I like Charles Xavier's original dream, like, no, I've always been behind it, but Jonathan Hickman is throwing that away.
Yep.
Yeah. How about you, Ben? Do you want something new, or do you want them to go back to the well?
I want something new, but I want it to be fucking, like, focused and quick. Like, if you want to do a story, make sure you can fit in, like, 5 to 6 issues. If you have to fucking publish it as a trade, don't make it as fucking heavy as a Gutenberg Bible. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's a little bit of an yeah.
Blowjobs for everyone.
Blowjobs for some.
Gambit looks at Rogue and then he's like, no. So, yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, this is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Ready.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.